good to go. So Steve Sherlock here for the Franklin Senior Writers Group, the Scribblers. Welcome to another session. Let's go around to find out who we have today. So
yay,
I said
us.
Steve Sherlock, and who do we have next to me?
I'm Bill Wiley.
And I'm Faith Flaherty.
I'm Alice Judge.
And I am still Peter J.
Still? You haven't
still.
Changed yet?
I go for consistency.
Well, you know, there's something to consistency.
What's the old line that's going around these days? You know, you just got to be yourself because everybody else is taken.
This is true. I wouldn't want you to be me.
I couldn't rise to that pay grade.
I am looking for a clone, but I'm not sure that's the same thing.
You'd just be walking around going, he's really not me. I don't know him. I disavow all knowledge.
And for the close listeners, we're a little less voices than normal due to a couple of things, probably rescheduling. Apologies for that, but it's such as it is. The other thing I think it brings up is just trying to get more interest in getting people to step forward. Generally, they're writers.
Our exuberance remains high nonetheless.
Hmm?
And by the way, just for folks listening, exuberance is my college word of the day.
Oh.
So just
get your 25 cents in.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, we were noodling over the idea, Steve, that maybe we might be able to do some things that are interactive at the Senior Center, invite people to our meetings, and have an opportunity for those who wish to participate in some fun exercises. And everybody gets out alive. You know, one of the things that we were talking about is, you know, that fun exercise of everybody finding a way to finish the last sentence they heard. So I will actually start a sentence right now.
Pay attention.
We were so confused in the elevator, we had no idea what was going on with all the buttons.
There was a day when there was somebody in there, in the elevator, that to show you how to do the buttons.
That's true. I used to want to do that.
I'm new to this country, and I don't speak much English, and nobody seems to know what to do with buttons.
I used to play that, the elevator operator. Hey, wasn't that a song?
Elevator operator.
Yes,
yeah.
I used to play that. So we're pushing the buttons, and then the doors go and open, close, but we want to go up and down. Some want to go up, and some want to go down.
You can take the high road, or you can take the low road. If you're going to take the high road, you're generally going to go up, and the question is, how many buttons do you push? I've seen people come in and see the buttons, and they push every single one, and they go up one floor at a time.
I would refer to that as the low road. And the thing about the high road is that there's really too much huffing and puffing. So I'm kind of a middle of the road guy.
Actually, this is true. When I am waiting for the elevator, I will press all the buttons because I want it to come down to where I am.
So it's you! So
the poor guy that did that, he was going up and down. Do you think he ever got seasick or got tired of opening the door for people?
Well, if he was still there, maybe somebody could redo the song like Charlie on the MTA and, you know, reach in through the window and give him a quarter so that he can get off on the next stop.
We're still waiting for Bill.
I have to be careful on elevators because I do get...
That's true.
I get motion sickness.
He has debilitating motion sickness. He doesn't ride elevators.
Oh.
He chooses to do the stairs.
And the escalator is...
Oh, that's iffy.
Iffy sometimes.
Escalier.
Yes, yes.
I tried to elevate my career once. It just sat there.
Some people don't like escalators.
Yes.
I remember going to every year for a while on my granddaughter's birthday, I would take her to the American Girl store in Natick. That was terrific, and she'd stay over. Oh, what a treat that was. That cafeteria or that dining hall was great, and the food was out of this world. Everybody's so surprised when they say, wow, the food was really top-notch. But when we had to go to the second floor, she was hesitant, you know. And so we made a practice of going up and down the escalator, you know, so she wouldn't be. That was one of the treats in my life, and now she's been accepted at UMass Amherst, and That's the end of the American Girls Tour.
Well, I have to say, having been in this elevator now for 5 minutes and getting to meet everyone, I did not know that I was going to find so many interesting friends. And then suddenly, the doors open, we all left, and went on our way.
Come back next week,
anonymous.
And maybe you'll hear the rest of the story. It's amazing how things work out that way.
Can we begin?
We absolutely can. Since we've at least teased with that other stuff, let's just get into the real work, because I know some other people have some time commitments, so we appreciate that, and why don't you go, Faith?
Okay, all right. There. Actually, I read this book that was so interesting that I couldn't think of anything else. I mean, I dreamt about it during the day. I was visualized. I could not get it out of my mind, so I really couldn't write anything except a book report. Okay. The name of the book is The Women by Kristen Hannah. It's a wonderful story about a woman's experience working as a nurse during the Vietnam War. It's heart-wrenching and impactful. It brought back memories. The Vietnam War was during my young adult years. My classmates, friends, and their brothers were drafted to fight a war in a country they couldn't even find on a map. And too many died there. An entire generation was impacted. The story is about Frances McGrath. She lived a privileged life on Coronado Island, California. She was the California girl the Beach Boys sang about. She was perpetually tanned, long blonde hair, and a surfer girl. Her family lived within walking distance of the beach. Her father was a conservative who expected his son to be a hero soldier and his daughter to marry and produce grandchildren. Her father's study had a hero's wall where the men in the family served proudly. Her mother was loving and popular at the country club. When Frances's brother, Finley, became a Navy pilot, Frances conceived the idea of following him. She had just graduated from nursing school. She didn't tell anyone. She thought she'd surprise everyone. They'd be so proud of her. Only they weren't. They were appalled. Young ladies didn't go to war. What could she do? She already committed. She signed up. And she joined the Army because they would take her immediately with only 2 weeks of training. Her parents were angry and barely said goodbye. Then the family received the dreaded visit from two uniform officers telling them that Finley's plane was blown out of the sky. There was nothing left of his body. They were told to put a stranger's boots in the casket and bury that. With her grief and confused emotions in turmoil, Frances arrives in Vietnam. She only had 2 weeks training where she learned to roll bandages. Luckily, two veteran nurses, Bob and Ethel, take the rookie Frances under their wings. She was completely unprepared to be a combat nurse. The three women became fast friends, soulmates, and sisters. Frances starts in a ward where the soldiers were unconscious, but there is where she became acclimated to Vietnam. She eventually becomes a surgical nurse working with Dr. Jamie Callahan. They become very close, but on his way home, his helicopter is shot down and he is killed. There are many horrors. One of the worst was the realization of seeing all these teenagers dying, wounded, crippled, blinded, and then reading in the newspaper, The Stars and Stripes, that the United States was winning the war. Clearly, they weren't. The nurses also treated the Vietnam citizens. The description of people suffering from napalm was abhorrent. I cried reading about the mother with the infant in her arms, fused together when napalm had been poured down on them. It was clear that our government was misleading the public. The soldiers in Vietnam couldn't believe what was happening. It was a stupid war. We shouldn't have been there in the first place. Make peace and leave. But Nixon pushed on, even into another country, Cambodia. The world was crazy. The soldiers' fathers had been proud to serve in World War II in Korea. What happened? Presidents and leaders were assassinated. Protests, police brutality, and war. Misleading the subject is too soft a description. The United States government was lying to its people and killing a generation of its own. There is romance in the story. Francis falls in love with the Navy pilot Ryson, but he is also killed just before returning home. By the way, the life expectancy of a helicopter pilot was 30 days. Frankie finally goes home to a different kind of war. Her friends and neighbors don't welcome her home. Her parents were embarrassed by her. She finds a job as a nurse, but has to start by emptying bedpans. She, who was a surgical combat nurse. Yes, she had a problem adjusting to this different reality, especially when Ryson appears again. Apparently, he didn't die. He was captured and held in a prison camp. But their reunion wasn't. I'll just leave it at that. Eventually, she has a mental breakdown, but with the support of her friends, Bob and Ethel, Frankie puts back her life. She reconciles with her parents, even becoming a nurse again, but more importantly, she moves on. If you were alive during the Vietnam era, you would easily relate and live through these times again. The Woman by Kristen Hanna is an extraordinary novel about a woman's experience working as a nurse during the Vietnam War. It's heart-wrenching, it's impactful, it's moving, and it's fantastic.
Lovely. Wow, I want to read it. Although it was such a sad time. And
I think Faith gets an A for her book report.
Yeah, have you ever sought to do book reviews for newspapers? Or
no, I do them on my blog. Yeah, this... it was really something. I mean, it's for men, even though it's called The Women, because you'd like it, if you, especially cool. if you lived through that time.
They were treated badly, people who went through that.
She made the mistake of wearing her uniform home, and she was spit on. And her parents, who were embarrassed that she went in the first place, told everybody she was studying in Italy.
Oh. Wow.
So then when she came home, they didn't know what to say.
Oops. Yeah.
Tragedy on tragedy.
Mm-mm.
And that there she was, a combat nurse, trained to, as the surgeons went from soldier to soldier to soldier, they left the combat nurses close up their surgery. So she went from that to emptying bedpans. And one time when she was on night duty, a casualty came in and he couldn't breathe, and she called for the doctor. Nobody came. She called again. Nobody came. So she did a trach on him and saved his life. She was fired because that was a liability, opening him up for liability.
Wow.
She was fired for saving a man's life.
Even though she probably was very comfortable with the knowledge of how to do it.
People that came back just weren't treated well. It's a shame.
Is indeed.
I have the first chapter of my murder at Town Hall. I decided to make the chapters shorter, and I have revised this, so here it is, the first chapter. It is strange how small towns attract corruption like mosquitoes to a swamp. Developer Truman Oates had been before selectmen, before many times for shortcuts he felt he could take in building houses in our small coastal town of Sandy Ridge, Maine. But at tonight's selectmen's meeting, Oates had to answer why he didn't replicate wetlands back of the North Avenue Estates, a new development where residents like Joe Sano had purchased beautiful acreage for his family. The houses were expensive, but went quickly. Unfortunately for the town, Oates did not do diligence, and tiny 3-year-old Julie Sano drowned in wetlands back of her grandfather's property. Police had arrested Oates, but to the amazement of residents, he walked, and tonight Oates had to answer to the town board. Joe Sano was understandably distraught, and word around town was he had called in the state police, saying Sandy Ridge police were ineffective and not acting fast enough in his granddaughter's death, calling it murder. Sano will be at the selectmen's meeting tonight, I knew that, and Oates never missed a meeting. Residents would flock to the meeting tonight, I knew. They preferred to be at the meeting rather than watch it on cable. Every one of the town's finest would be in attendance, and tensions were high. I didn't have to cover tonight's meeting, but I was curious as to what town fathers would say to Oates in light of poor Julie Sano's death. If I was still a staff reporter at the Courier, York County's only daily newspaper, I would have to cover it. But alas, I got the boot, thanks to my being nosy about my suburban editor Bill Shaw's personal life concerning a murder we had in this quiet coastal town I love a couple of years back. My name is Allison Peters. I came to Sandy Ridge, Maine 5 years ago, worked at the Courier almost all that time, and it's hard for me to let go of the fact that maybe I can get my job back. If I was honest with myself, I knew I was looking for a hot story that would entice Shaw to take me back as staff reporter. But first, I knew I had to apologize to Shaw. So far, though, the opportunity hadn't presented itself, and the more time passed, the more nervous about approaching him I got. My friends tell me to go to the Portland, Maine Daily, but for some reason I can't seem to chalk my past faux pas with Shaw up and move on. Meanwhile, I serve coffee and donuts at Edie's Coffee Shop. The people I work with are great, even Edie, the owner, so I'm living with the status quo, each day hoping to get back to newspaper news. I left early for the selectmen's meeting, knowing the whole town was going to flock to this meeting. I feed my cat, had a salad, coffee, and an orange, and then departed. There are never enough parking spaces at Town Hall, but I was a half hour early, so I got a space. I sat halfway down in the selectmen's conference room, so glad I didn't have to cover the meeting. Residents came up and wanted to know what I was doing now and told me they missed my writing in the newspaper. I told them I was enjoying doing something different, and they seemed satisfied with that. Joe Sano came into the room. I bent my head down. I felt terrible about his situation. I dreaded what could happen when the grandfather and the developer confronted each other, because I knew for certain that was going to happen tonight, and I feared the outcome. Oates came into the selectmen's conference room, accompanied by Paul Wakefield, chairman of the planning board. Oftentimes, the two appeared to be joined at the hip. Oates was divorced, thought himself good-looking. Most older single women in Sandy Ridge agreed, and from what I heard around town, Oates had no trouble getting a date for the evening or overnight, if you know what I mean. He was over 6 feet, tan from working outside. He owned his own development company, named after him. Oates was wealthy, could afford the best. Tonight he was unshaven, had a blue shirt on and jeans. He appeared not to have a worry in the world. The meeting started with Chairman DePesto sounding his gavel. It took 2 or 3 minutes to get everyone in their seat and background chatter to stop. DePesto looked around, saw Sano, and asked the room for a moment of silence for the tragedy that has happened in our community and to the Sano family. Sano's head was down, and when he raised his head, he had tears in his eyes. The grandfather tried to talk, but his voice broke. "This is not where you should be right now," said DePesto. "Your family needs you at this time of grief. What I need to make sure is Truman is jailed for murder," Sarno yelled, jumping out of his chair, rushing to the front of the room where Truman Oates stood. Looking at the selectman chairman, Sarno asked what everyone was asking. "How come Oates hasn't been arrested for my granddaughter's death?" Looking at Sarno coming up to Oates with hate in his eyes, I knew the grandfather wouldn't be any match for Oates. The developer appeared to be amused as Sarno came towards him, not fazed at all. Then Sarno took out a gun. Everybody took cover. "Why is DePesto sounding his gavel? What bedlam?" The lights went out. Women screamed. A shot rang out. Someone yelled, "Turn on the lights." When the lights returned, wealthy developer Truman Oates lay dead on the floor, blood circling his body. Joe Sarno looked comatose, with his gun still in his hand, staring down at Oates, who had the blank stare of death.
A cliffhanger in the first chapter. Now we have to continue.
And then we need a dramatic organ stinger here. Dun, bum, bum, bum.
Usually she would have ended it. The lights went out. We wouldn't have known.
Well, I had to show Truman Oates' blank stare of death.
Yeah. That would have been the beginning
Whenever
of the next
chapter. Whenever you see somebody dead in these programs, they always have their eyes open. I wonder why that is. But there, Truman Oates he's got the blank stare of death.
Staring into the infinite.
Do you have a new poem, Bill?
Yeah, this is one I wrote half of it last night, and this morning I finished it off.
Oh, it's fresh indeed.
This is an oldies love poem. "You know I feel fine because I will always think about you. You are my love, the most beautiful girl in the world. These boots are made for walking, and they'll go walking right beside you. I bless the day I found you. I'll always stay around you. And so, my darling, let it be me. Oh, baby, I feel so lonely. I can't get no satisfaction, but when I'm with you, you will light my fire. On the beach, please wear your itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, yellow polka-dot bikini. Because, you know, I am your boogeyman. Without your love, I am nothing. Without you beside me, the sun ain't gonna shine anymore. When I see you, I can't take my eyes off you. Let's go walking in the sunshine, because you know you can't roller skate in a buffalo herd. I say farewell so long, goodbye, because you are my sunshine."
It's playing your head as he says this.
Quite a few titles in there.
Yeah.
So I guess my only question is then, does your chewing gum lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight while you're sitting on the dock of the bay?
I should have used that one, yeah. I had to throw in a weird song in there.
Yes, yes.
You got them all in.
For sure, for sure. And you've got something, I think, sir.
I do. I'm going to harken back a few weeks.
Harken back.
One of the things that I did recently was, you know, as part of everything that happens here at Franklin TV, I went up to Vermont to cover the eclipse, and we are working on a program about that. Now, rather than everyone else's coverage of the eclipse was instant and gone, we're doing more of a retrospective, which is going to take some time. You know, major networks covered the eclipse live from several locations across the U.S. TV stations along the path of totality had their own local news teams weighing in. Good coverage, lots of fanfare and cheers. Then, on to the next news cycle. We were also covering the eclipse at the precise center line of totality, 4 miles north of St. Albans, Vermont. precise, within 100 feet or so of the center line in the Champaign Country Club's parking lot. This is where the more seasoned and serious eclipse trackers headed. For some, this was their third, others their fifth. We interviewed several as they set up computerized tracking systems. We learned much about eclipses, the science, and the humanity as well. One person said, "Lots of folks headed to the park in downtown St. A's, even more in Burlington. That's going to be a mosh pit. This is exactly where you want to be." I found that to be good advice. The experience of totality is quite literally otherworldly. While sun and moon may be small against the sky, the vast scope of it completely envelops you because the entire sky above becomes as dark as a new moon night. In fact, only a new moon can eclipse the sun. Then the unexpected. We are on somewhat higher ground, open ground at a golf course. While we were centered in the deep cone of totality, the far horizon all around us was still lit. And we experienced this glorious 360-degree wraparound sunset effect. Our new friends, the eclipse chasers, went silent. Some had tears of joy. We are all totally together in the moment. They're also providing some additional images for our program. Our eclipse special will be completed later this year. What might we reveal? For now, we'll just have to keep you in the dark.
Very nice.
Wasn't it nice that day that everybody was united?
Exactly.
Everybody was of the same mind.
Exactly.
Watching that and happy.
Yes. That was a particular thing I noticed, is that there was this camaraderie, bonhomie, unity amongst all of the people who were busy tracking the event, enjoying, experiencing
the
event.
Some made it a party, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, on the news there were characters.
They were following it through the different states as it came up. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In fact, it was interesting to me that there were four or five people there that we interviewed who came up from Pennsylvania, even though it went through Pennsylvania, Erie, Pennsylvania specifically.
Wow.
They chose to come up to Vermont because they were looking for more of a guarantee that the clouds were not going to be an issue. They wanted clear skies, and that Vermont was the best opportunity to do that, that you could get to. An even better opportunity was just up the road, another 5 hours at Jackman, Maine. But getting to Jackman, Maine is not easy.
Kids were taken out of school, you know, for day.
And once in a lifetime.
Because it's an education in itself,
So just putting it out there, people, the next one in 2027, get your plane tickets now, is in Luxor, Egypt.
Oh.
And it will be a honking 6 minutes long. And it will happen right at high noon, the maximum effect. And then 1 year later, you're buying plane tickets to Sydney, Australia, where it will happen in the late day. And if you're like these eclipse chasers, you'll be on the other end of Australia at Cable Beach, where it will be at noontime, and it will be, again, about 5.5 minutes long. So there are people who are already booking up for this stuff, for real.
Really? There are eclipse chasers?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, one guy brought, you know, two automatic telescopes that are tracking the sun, the moon, the whole bit. We were there with five cameras just to make sure we got it. Because you can't do a show without the eclipse, without shooting the eclipse.
Hard to explain on the radio.
Exactly.
Yes.
You had to be there.
Yeah.
You can imagine five cameras all pointing up.
Yes.
Yeah. It was just a nice overall feeling.
Yes.
About the day.
But now you see, if we had an eclipse a month,
it would lose its
wonder.
Well,
we'll have to.
It would be a commodity. And it'll be, I can't come over that day.
You could do that, Peter.
Yeah, there's going to be an eclipse. I don't drive during the eclipses. Maybe it'll rain.
Yeah, I'll catch the next one.
God, wouldn't that be terrible if it rained on Eclipse Day?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there'd still be people out there trying to look up.
Potentially. Yeah. Yep. Yep. I've got a new poem to share, and it's interesting that Faith and I sort of collaborated, although we didn't, but our minds generally sometimes kind of hit on a similar topic. So I did go back 50 years ago to Vietnam and kind of took a different turn on it. So you'll hear. Titled, Do the Right Thing. Part 1. When Dad was 18, he enlisted as a U.S. Marine, serving and surviving 3 World War II Pacific Island battles to do the right thing. When I was 18, I got a draft number for the Vietnam War that I hoped would not call me unless it was the right thing. Now, 50 years from that Vietnam conflict, when those that did serve returned, they did not get the recognition that should have been the right thing. War was hell, is hell, and being home in the U.S. wasn't much easier. Anti-war protests, race riots, gas shortages, all trying to do the right thing. The news headlines were big, dramatic. Chaos seemed to reign. And yet, many of us survived those days and trying times to do the right thing. I had trained for a few years with a rifle drill team. I was captivated by their precision, cadence, moving in unison, doing the right thing. Part 2. Looking back, that was likely a reach for stability in the midst of the chaos around, along with the lessons from Coach Wooden to do the right thing. UCLA in that day was the team, consistent, dominant on the college basketball court. Coach melded great talent in his system for success, doing the right thing. I still take my new shoes and redo the laces, just like I had read about as one of the lessons that Coach Wooden taught in his prep for the team to do the right thing. A simple thing, shoelaces, but tied properly, they stayed tied. When time was critical, using time wisely paid off, doing the right thing. 88-game win streak, 10 national championships, 7 consecutive, a set of records unmatched today, doing the right thing. So check Sherlock's shoes when you can. You should see the right lace goes over the left, a reminder to always do the right thing.
Nice.
Did you serve?
They never called my number. I was lucky.
Yes. And in an event that will live in infamy, let us not forget that Tanya Harding, in the Olympics, did not tie her skate shoes properly. She did not do the right thing. But the judges let her off the hook. Maybe the judges did not do the right thing. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, see, I would change the ending that you ran away to Canada.
Oh, that would be a whole other story.
Yeah, that would be another story.
Yeah.
It begs today's interesting question. We have protests and counter-protests.
Yes,
yeah, but they don't know how to do it. They should ask their grandparents. And besides that, their music stinks.
Well, there you have it. They're not
there
doing
you have it.
You got that right.
You heard it here, folks. The definitive.
The thing with these kids is they have professional protesters
agitators
egging them on, you know.
Blame George Soros.
And their parents are at home thinking, oh, my God, my kid is going to be expelled.
Yep.
Paid all this money for nothing.
Mm. There's nowhere to hide.
Nowhere to hide.
No. So that was the round of stories and sharings today. Continue to tune in for more because we'll come back with more next time because we're going to do the right thing. So to conclude, this is Steve Sherlock.
I'm Bill Wiley.
Faith Flaherty.
Alice Judge.
I'm still Peter J.
Still remaining Peter J.